SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevebick.com. And from the land where it doesn't stop raining, I think it's going to be a nice week. That's the way it's shaping up. But boy, we had our share over the weekend. I won't say it wreaked havoc, but it was a bit of a racing interrupted at times, including yesterday before the Amsterdam, where, I mean, the skies opened. And there's a lot of that. Colonial comes back today, and of course, it was just a week ago where they got slammed. It made for some difficult scenarios. It's always hard when rain arrives at a earlier than expected, no matter what the models look like, and so it makes it hard on the racing office and some of the the decisions and the MTOs and keeping them in and not the whole thing, and that came into play a little too much. But everybody understands. I couldn't move fast enough to kind of reorient things in terms of the late multis, for instance. So you got to play, dance to the tune that plays, right? Overall, and there, in addition to the ambient conditions, there was also over the weekend here a couple of incidents that are really not resonating all that well. And first and foremost, I suppose, we'll take them in order. The scratch on Saturday of HP Moon, Lacey Gaudet, and a number of owners that had come to town to see the two-year-old debut, and confusion over the markings. And we won't get into it too deeply today, but during the week I'll get an appropriate party to explain that process. It's not something that comes up too often. Frankly, it's not something that it becomes an issue until it becomes an issue, until there's some confusion about, in fact, they had one, right? They had the one in, just the other day at across the pond at Goodwood, right? Was it Goodwood? They had the, who was it? Was Jessica Harrington, I think, had a horse. Confusion. Two horses that were going to run, and then they sent a 4-year-old to run in a 2-year-old race. The process, the horses get checked in the morning, and then there's another check, and we're also in the middle of changing from lip tattoos, digital tracking, and that apparently not 100% reliable yet, not perfect, that system, as it is being more widely instituted. But when your foal is born and when it gets registered, there's a process, and all the identifying markings on the horse are recorded on its, on its certificate, and it might be, star on forehead, snip, right nostril, a little bit of coloration that goes over a nostril, whatever it might be, Blaze, you know, wide Blaze, all the different, you know, the three white socks, all those identifications. And you would hope, you would have thought, you would expect, as sets of connections and as horse players and everything else that is relying on the system, you'd expect and hope that that's all been taken care of. And the confusion that went from the morning into the early afternoon to the paddock all the way to the gate, that's what was so sort of mystifying about what transpired here. And this was a really poorly handled by the identification staff, and then in terms of communicating to the stewards on a timely manner. And you know, if that horse wasn't going to be allowed to run until further identified, and you know, people would go, as annoying as this is, people would be more horrified and furious if a horse was allowed to run that then turned out not to be the right horse. So in terms of erring, are you better off erring on the side of this kind of caution? Probably. It doesn't make the miscue involved any easier to accept. Not for Lacey Godet, not for the owners. So what about the partners who, I understand, traveled, you know, from different parts of the country? So Lacey was pretty stoic about it. I don't blame her for, you know, being irked, but said that they'd come back, and we'll find out. One of these interesting topics that you don't know is even something to address. But the transfer from Lip Tattoos to, you know, which have always had their own issues, especially as horses age and as the tattoo gets tougher to read. But from what we understand, there's still some bugs to be worked out in the digital identification arena. So we'll something to talk about. Then there's part two of this, which involves Kenny McPeak. And the good news when it comes to the herpes outbreak, the all clear has been given, and that's great. Then came Kenny trying to enter some horses and was told by the gaming commission they can't enter. Well, what do you mean? The all clear came on the first, and the horses were allowed to, you know, train with the general population. Why would they not be allowed to enter? And it's just a mystery, apparently. I didn't, you know, since the story came out, I haven't had a chance to do, you know, further review, but I mean, it's already been just a mammoth frustration for the barn, and you understand that. And everybody, again, everybody is respectful of what has to happen on a lockdown scenario with a herpes outbreak, you know, especially at a meet like this where horses are coming and going, and they're, you know, being swapped out in a lot of cases. And there's any number of barns that have, you know, multiple outfits in them. And, you know, for all the, you know, appropriate reasons, it's a, you know, set of protocols. But it doesn't make any sense that if the all clear came, why the horses couldn't be entered and allowed to run, you know, this week. Maybe we'll get Kenny. I and I'm sure he'd love to vent. So let's clear all the administrative issues out of the way. There was also the Flavian Pratt decision from New Jersey and the stewards there suspending him and setting up a set of dates that he doesn't have to deal with until after Del Mar. That certainly feels preferential and kid-gloved versus what they did to Carlos Montalvo, who had every legitimate excuse about using the crop and was yet slapped around admonished without without consideration, really. I guess it was considered, and then they it really an inequitable handling of the two incidents within a couple of weeks of each other, a week of each other, actually, 8 days. The drum beats of you know frustration and annoyance out of the New Jersey Commission crop prop is just it's a fountain. Enough of that for a minute. I'm sure we'll get back to it over the next couple of days. Can we talk about some racing? Yes, we can. And the racing itself, when not taken off the turf and not conducted, you know, under various duresses, was terrific. Some very fun outcomes and upsets and prices, and it was a particularly Saturday, obviously, at Saratoga with Lexingtonian, and between Jack Sisterson, 2 weeks ago? Probably two weeks ago. Can't be more than that, right? What was the other recent win? I can't remember now. Who can keep track of these of these Jack Sisterson $70 Grade One wins? Unbelievable. There were a few things that worked, I think, to help make that happen. And, you know, one is that Lexingtonian is a plucky and hard trier and a horse that does not like to relent. And, you know, now is, you know, building this resume, and certainly one of those kinds of horses that you like to see get, you know, the elusive Grade One after, you know, any number of tries and, you know, having had a, you know, already a very credible and an admirable career. I mean, $500,000, 4 wins coming in, and, you know, competing at the highest level. Just missed in the Crosby by a nose last year when sent out there, and, you know, coming off the Met, shortening up, and clearly drawing inside. You know, this is a point. I know that the point was made by James Scully on Friday that if you were, you know, wanted to consider a price, and Nick Tamaro too said that if you're looking for an alternate price scenario, that Lexingtonian well worth considering. The moisture in that track, I will say this right out. I mean, when you saw, and I spent a good portion of the, you know, the day, you know, back and forth down to the, you know, track apron, and there was a lot of spray and a lot of kickback. And when you see those horses spread out like that, that's part of the scenario. I mean, look at the chart. You know, Lexingtonian by a half, you know, basically special reserve, you know, came ranged up, took the lead, and Lexingtonian hung in, and, you know, then prevails. And a terrific effort by Jose Lascano. And Then it was a length and a quarter back to Whitmore. Then it was 2.5 back to Montauk Traffic, and then 3/4 to Firenze, and 2.5. When you see horses spread out like that, horses are turning their head, and they're getting sprayed, and you know, not every horse wants to go run through that, and. You know, you see this on that kind of a track, and everybody was coming back. Horse and riders were coming back caked, and so the track certainly a contributing factor, but you know the top pair. What can you say? $70 mutual for the Spitestown 5-year-old and. Every time there's one of these, Calumet, whether it's Jack Sisterson or Rusty Arnold or anybody else that you know is plying the trade for Brad Kelly and his team, you just cannot appreciate enough what this resurgent Calumet has done and what it means, and certainly. You know, this win goes a long way, and he's got more to accomplish as they work toward a return to Del Mar. And when we talked, I don't know if we'll talk to Jack today or not, but, you know, knowing how well he ran at Del Mar last summer, that has got to be pretty heartening, I'll tell you, you know, heading toward the Breeders' Cup. So... The grade one of the weekend here, the Alf Vanderbilt and Lexitonia. And was obviously the linchpin to any number of outstanding mutual returns, including the cross country, which came back. We'll get to that because it also included a nice price for our friend Will Schwartz and partner at the Monmouth Oaks. How great was that for Will? Delighted for him. Leader of the band. In fact, Will had a pair in there, and they both look good. In fact, the other one ended up third. So double black type in that Monmouth Oaks. Midnight Obsession, who tested Edie, Meanie, Miney, Mo, who ran very well. Ran very, very well. And the fact there was a couple of horses like this that were stretching out. You know, lightly raced horses. We'll get to the one in yesterday. I think we'll talk to Kevin Addard today as well. He had a huge weekend, punctuated certainly yesterday by winning the Royal North and the Woodbine Oaks. That Money for Row, who it was a nice weekend for listeners, I think, because you heard Brian Lynch. We've talked about Roma and what. You know, what they're doing and their horses. And this was a horse that, you know, kind of stressed on Friday. And that they got a nice, very nice effort from that Emmeline. I thought 8-1. I thought it did okay. But we thought that Emmeline was, 3-1 on Money for Row was a nice number, actually, a third choice. But anyway, that Edie, Meanie, Miney, Mo stretching out. For Miguel Vera and Holly Hill, was absolutely game, but might have been softened up a little bit. And when leader of the band came calling under Frankie Pennington and cruised on by and wins by a couple of lengths. And that was a 22-60 mutual. And that started the cross country. Then came the Vanderbilt and, you know, there were a lot of tickets on the floor. To say the least, right? It also, by the way, now that I think about it, with Lexitonian, it also helped propel Kirk White to a John Deere X330 riding mower, Bettendorf, Iowa. Kind of funny that it's right across from Moline, the home of John Deere. So congratulations to Kirk. He went 4-for-5, and thanks to everybody for playing. And hopefully we'll get another NTRA Advantage John Deere product next year. But this was really a lot of fun. And it really, it's funny because it came down to Dr. Chevelle because there were a couple of people that had Mark Glatton. We're going to talk to Mark. And if Kirk, if Dr. Chevelle wins, then Kirk goes 4 for 5. And it was a tough sequence. I mean, obviously, Essential Quality ended up being, you know, the single people thought that he was. And yet, that was a hairy scenario, too. I was actually sat with Lee Einsiedler and Mike Salito to watch the race, and we were all talking beforehand, and we said, you know, can this horse lose? And three of us were like looking at each other and said simultaneously, keep me in mind. And Joel Rosario saving ground, and, you know, really tested Essential Quality to the wire. A professional win, and certainly Essential Quality was wide all the way. We'll talk more about this with Mig at 10 o'clock. But how about the headlong charge of the five horses in the Jim Dandy, the five of them into the turn, five across the track? That was crazy. I think part of that was, you know, especially the mile and an eighth trip, you want to be on the front end at Saratoga, and that, you know, that's firmly established. But then they started to sort themselves out a little bit. But Essential Quality was committed at that point. Saez was basically at the very least three wide, and so he had a wide trip all the way around. And I'm sure from a sheet figure standpoint, it's going to be, you know, a top number. Got a moderate 98 buyer, and we'll see. It'll have to be, it feels like, he's going to have to be probably a little better than that, though, for Travers. And Travers will shape up, and I'm going to guess that, you know, everybody that was thinking, they're all going to line up. That includes, from Friday, should mention in the Curlin, Dynamic One, who kind of came running. And boy, Andy was all over Dynamic One on Friday, and couldn't have been more right. And that was a pick me up performance. Figure wise, moderate 91 buyer, but there was nothing wrong with that, especially because he, you know, came from off the pace and closed well. That was a solid effort by Dynamic One. So the 3 year old scene, we'll sort that out as the week continues. Before it gets too late, though, I got so many other things I hear, obviously, mentioning Brad Cox and Essential Qualities win last night at Del Mar, the win by She Dares the Devil, goes out to Del Mar, wins that Clement Hirsch. I guess we should get Brad. The rest of the Woodbine stuff we've got to get to. I'm just looking to see what else I've got. I got Stacks Bowling Green. We got to catch up. We got tons. All right, but let's do this. I did not want the news from Friday, Bernardini's passing. Did not want that to go unaddressed and under discussed and forgotten about. And I'm sure we'll do some things with Sid on Wednesday. Sid will talk about what he's been able to accomplish from a breeding standpoint. What I was hoping to do today, and we're going to visit with Charlie Bowden, and I think a lot of us, me certainly, got to know Charlie when he was Charlie Darley, or Darley Charlie, depending on which way you wanted to call him. And his time overlapped, and between Tom Albertrani's tied up, so I won't, we won't talk to Tom until either later in the week, or he said, you know what, maybe next week even. So we'll talk to Tom maybe after he's got Faya and a couple of others coming up back to Troy Friday. Terrific running of the Troy. I had to reach out to Charlie, and he said, absolutely, I would very much appreciate a chance to talk about Bernardini. And so Charlie Bowden is going to join us now, and then Mark Glatt and Mig and much, much more. So let's reach for Charlie. And going back to Friday for a second, for those that listen to the replay, the fundraising efforts continue, and all the really anguished hopes and prayers for Mike Riccio and the family continue. And last night in Lexington, a big auction. I mean, how this has come together in I mean, literally. I mean, it's just a couple of days. So thanks to everybody who's pitched in. Charlie Bowden joins us. Good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Charlie, I thought of you immediately. You and Tom Albertrani and Jimmy Bell and the whole team. And this was you know, a shock, I think, to everybody. I had not even heard that, you know, that he was fighting an issue. But I imagine you've got countless thoughts and you know, emotions tied to that news Friday.
No question, Steve. Yeah, what a special horse he was for so many people, myself included, to be associated with, as even remotely as I was. The guys who raised him in the farm where he, you know, grew up and spent his stallion career is full of people that cared as much for him as any horse I'm sure they ever came in contact with. In particular, a fellow named Phil Hampton, who took care of him. And Phil was purchased that farm, and I think Bernardini was actually foaled there at John and Bell, which, you know, made it even more special for Philip, who was his groom in the stallion barn that took care of him, and he took care of Holy Bull. Phil's a special man too, and the loss for all of them, Michael Banahan and Jimmy and Bell and Dan Pride and everybody that was associated with him, it's very sad. He was a special horse from day one.
There's a story that Steve Askin told us at the time, and then you know, subsequently about Tom Albertrani, you know, saying to him that, you know, hey, wait, I got a 2-year-old that's going to be terrific, and I forget who the horse was that debuted smashingly, and Steve reached Tom and said, wow, that really is a nice horse. He said, that's not the horse.
Yeah, he knew, I think, early on what he had in the barn, and I think he lost his first start at Gulfstream.
Yeah,
Jerry Bailey's, you know, not on his wall of fame, but I think that's the only time he rode him. But Javier got the ride next time and kept it, Castellano, and yeah, he was an amazing racehorse. My association with Darley went back a few years before him, but not with the stallion operation until he came around, and can you imagine what it was like when that horse, who, you know, ran the table like he did, winning the Withers, I guess, and then the Preakness, and what did he do, the Jim Dandy?
Yep.
And the Travers, and he won. Yep. He won a race against older horses post Travers.
Jockey Club Gold Cup.
Jockey Club, yeah, the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And then maybe the Breeders' Cup was his last race. And he was was unlucky there. I think that was the year that Sheikh Mohammed's brother won the race. That's right, in Vizor.
Yep.
But for a horse like that, being by AP Indy, from the female family he was from, he was a physical specimen. you know, just as good a racehorse as anybody'd seen in a while. His Preakness win was obviously kind of overshadowed by Barbaro going down in the race, and no disrespect to a great horse, but I don't think Barbaro would have warmed him up that day myself. But he was a horse that would have been a stallion manager's dream and nightmare, which he was for those of us, you know, at Jonabel or at Darley at the time, because he was so popular. When we announced he was coming back to stand that year, so it was would have been 2007, I guess. And I think we announced it, you know, post Breeders' Cup, so, you know, right after the race itself. The response from the breeding population, from the breeding public, was overwhelming, to say the least. I think we had over 300 requests in the first 3 days that he was announced as coming back to Jonabel to stand. Jonabel had a fairly rigid policy on number of mares that a horse could breed, and I think this horse started out with the John Ferguson, who, you know, bought his dam, I think carrying Bernardini for Sheikh Mohammed, and John orchestrated along with Sheikh Mohammed his stallion career from the beginning, and the response was so overwhelming that it was decided right then and there that by Sheikh Mohammed, according to John Ferguson, that he wanted to look at every pedigree submitted for the horse, and they would let us know, you know, who they wanted to accept. And Sheikh Mohammed started out with, I think, a list of 30 of his own mares that were going to go to the horse, and that got whittled down to probably 20 at the end of the day. I think he bred closer to 135 than the 125, which was kind of the target number when we started out. And I think will go down as from a first crop of mares bred to a stallion, was the best I think a stallion at the time had ever had. I think we did an ad once, and I checked with Dan Pride. The number was 64 grade one winners and or producers that were in his first book of mares. 64. A phenomenal number, you know, just crazy. That's, you think about the ones that didn't quite make that mark as a grade one winner producer, grade three winner producers that were bred to him in that first book of mares, and it was amazing, really.
And of course, his arrival, when it came to the stallion side, kind of coincided with, you know, the back end of AP Indy's run. And so, there was that element. And, you know, exactly. Clearly, Charlie, too, his resume as a stallion is going to have a few more years to fill out, on the broodmare sire side as well. That may end up being, you know, really the legacy. Although you think about what you got, I'm trying to think of the recent.
Well, you got Maxfields out of a Bernardini mare, there, the yep. Oaks winner last year, Serengeti Empress. He's a prolific already as a broodmare sire at a pretty young age for a horse to be emerging as such. He was all class from the minute he stepped foot on the farm, in my experience. Now, I was around him a little bit on the racetrack, and you couldn't hear enough good comments about his demeanor and his personality, never questioning his abilities. But when he got back to the barn, this is a horse that, you know, think about this for a minute. Not that you really ever worry about it, but I worried about it as the guy, you know, booking mares to the horse and talking to breeders. And mind you, pissing off a lot of them because a lot of them got a big sorry. We can't take care of you this year. We'll try you next year. He was, like a lot of APNDs, a rig, you know, one testicle. And he was a horse that, you know, you didn't know, you know, until he got his first barren foal, you know, how that was going to play out. So you had that worry. And then, you know, stallions are, you know, they're creatures of habit, and you take them from the racetrack to a stallion barn, and there's a whole new set of influences and experiences for a horse. You know, some of them handle it well, some of them don't. This horse was the consummate professional. One jump covered a mare. You know, his fertility rates were off the charts good. He was just automatic and never turned a hair at his change in roles or jobs. Never turned into a mean horse. Philip could talk for hours about, you know, how intuitive the horse was himself and how smart he was and how much class he had. Just a special animal.
Yeah, and I pulled up, I wanted to pull up some of the, you know, some of the sire successes, and including Alpha, Cavorting, Donner, and Serve, Stay Thirsty, Angela Renee, Dame Dorothy, Green Point Crusader, Rachel's Valentina, Takaful, on the Broodmare. I mean,
there had never been a stallion who won the Travers that sired a Travers winner in each of his first two crops.
That's it.
He was doing things that horses have never done before from the beginning. So, you know, he was a special animal.
Well, and you mentioned that on the broodmare sire side, you said Serengeti Empress. How about Catholic Boy, Dunbar Road, Maxfield? You mentioned and Colonel Liam. These are all out of Bernardini mares.
Yeah, and current.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Still running, yeah.
I've got to bring it up. When the news broke on Friday, Jay Pridman was with us, and I called him star-crossed, Charlie, as a racehorse. And you mentioned the Preakness circumstance, and I remember, you know, also having that similar thought that even a healthy competing Barbaro might very well not have been able to beat him on that day. My favorite part of the win itself, netting out the tragedy surrounding Barbaro, was Kent DeSormo. I got very close with Mike Trombetta and the Sweet Northern Saint team, and when Kent came back to see Mike afterward, he said, what happened when that horse came to you? And he said, I don't know. I didn't see him. I only heard him. I just heard a whoosh.
Right. Well, it's the front end of an amazing commitment by a man with a passion that no one's ever seen before, Sheikh Mohammed, to the business. You know, that next year I think he spent close to, you know, a couple of $100 million buying stallion prospects. You know, you think about Card Fund, Street Sense, you know, horses in Europe, Dawn Approach or New Approach, and a couple of those horses, the Galileos, that he, you know, at the time wasn't breeding or buying Galileos until they were already made horses, and you know, his commitment. You know, Bernardini was a huge one, but going out and buying those horses that, you know, were very special stallion prospects that have turned into pretty amazing stallions themselves, if you talk about Hard Spun and Street Sense and the like. And Sheikh Mohammed, you know, when they decided to get behind a horse, it was with amazing broodmare power of their own. I remember one year Street Cry bred 100, might maybe been a couple years in a row, when he was very popular with the general public. He bred 100 mares of Sheikh Mohammed's, his own, that year. So you know, the job for a guy trying to manage the careers of a stallion was not easy, in that if you had probably 250 people that wanted to breed a street cry that year and there were only about 30 seasons to go around, you had to do a lot of dancing. You know, it's a little bit like Ron Anderson trying to, you know, juggle Joel Rosario, you know, as many people that want him, as hot as that jock is right now, and those kind of things. You know, it's just, it's not easy to tell the tale to a breeder who loves his mare that he can't breed to your stallion because either your mare's not quite up to snuff or Sheikh Mohammed's going to use the seasons for himself. It wasn't an easy thing to sell to the public.
Well, and then, you know, when you get turned away, your inclination and you build a relationship, whether for that mare or other mares, you know, when people get turned away that way, they end up at other farms. And I'm sure you tried to merchandise, other stallions on the roster. But, you know, people then establish relationships elsewhere and then they gravitate that way later.
Right, and that, you know, and that's why you get sons of these horses to stand, so you can fend off the demand with the hot young one, which Charlie and Godolphin does a great job of. Their marketing team is as good as they come, and you can look at the roster and see that legacy is continued.
Charlie Bowden with us, and I knew that Charlie popped in my head immediately, and thinking about Bernardini along with Jimmy Bell, and you mentioned Dan Pride and Tom Albertrani, and you know, Charlie, while I've got you, and of course you'll be we'll see you soon enough for sale week, but it also occurs to me, and I know you were listening ahead of the visit. You spent some time at Calumet as well, and you helped really some of the formative portions of what has become one of the, I think, underappreciated and underpublicized success stories around the game.
Yeah, Mr. Kelly's got a strange way of doing things, but it sure has played out well for him over the long term, and my contribution was minimal. I made him think about a few things, I think. I made him build a show ring for his stallions. I tried to get him to put some good stallions in the barn and trade off some of the ones that weren't so popular, but they're fast becoming a factor, I think, and they're growing some of their own that are going to be good enough to warrant a lot of attention.
I agree, and it's just good for the game. You know, a healthy, vibrant Calumet, offers a historic,
no
forbearance. Yeah, that's just good. It's like when they say that. The Celtics and Lakers and the Yankees, Red Sox, those kinds of franchises, when they're healthy, it's good for the sports, their respective sports. The same thing can be said of our game. And what from a business standpoint for you, Charlie, coming up here at Saratoga, what's on the agenda?
I'm going to come up and enjoy the sale as a spectator without any real business. I've got some action in September. Gary Young and I are going to attack the first couple books of the September sale for some of his clients and maybe a couple of mine, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that we're in play making some noise there. But I'm awful busy with a couple of teenagers and a lot of golf tournaments, lacrosse tournaments, swim meets, and... I'm multi-purpose in these days and loving it.
It's always great, even under these circumstances, always great to connect, and I wanted everybody to appreciate some reflections about Bernardini, and from whether people were horse players and appreciated him and enjoyed him, or those that bred to him and so forth, and our daughters, we've got products out of daughters of Bernardini, a last contribution, a champion, and still some chapters to write yet.
No question, Steve. And, we all in this business strive to get around the best horses and the best horse people we can. That's kind of the brass ring we're all reaching for, and Bernardini certainly afforded me that opportunity, and can never regret a minute of that.
Well, and so for at least these 15 minutes, back to the days of Darley Charlie. Charlie Darley. Whenever we'd see Churchill Derby Week up on the sixth floor, the cry would go up. Charlie
Darley. Yeah, giving out hats and coats makes everybody friendly. That's true.
Right? Exactly right. But we've all stayed. That's not the difference maker when it comes to being friendly with Charlie Bowden. Charlie, thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. All the
Charlie
best.
Bowden, everybody, and that is really a distinct. The first thing I thought of when the headline came across and on Friday when the news broke, and it's funny because and I'll let Sid on Wednesday. You'll hear from Sid, I think, extensively, and I'm sure he'll write this week about Bernardini, because it didn't necessarily seem in the early, in those first early years of the produce that he was, that he was exploding, that he was getting the kind of, instead it's been kind of a steady, just a steady line of production and excellent horses, but it didn't seem at the time. I mean, when you now go back and you look and you go through this, this laundry list of the individuals who's, direct and indirectly tied to him, it's an accomplished, outstanding stallion career. But I'm sure Sid'll discuss it. And that insight that Charlie provided, I hadn't, that part of it, I wouldn't have thought of immediately, just how much of his book was already, obligated, to the operation. So, Mark Glatt, in fact, I just sent Mark, I just sent, Mark Glatt's phone number to Mark. I think he's got it. Case, here you go. There's this happens, and I'm if there's any number of horsemen listening that have gotten that same kind of text where you I just sent you your own number. We'll get Mark Glatt in here to talk about Dr. Chevelle and the win in the Crosby, and yeah, Mark just said, yeah, are we still calling? Yes, we're going to call right now. I don't know if you saw, Ray Pollock, who spends the summers with his wife Carol out there and at Del Mar, and Ray got the backstory on Dr. Chevelle and the pronunciation, because I mean I've been saying Shivel from the start of the career, and apparently though it's Mr. Freeze. Ray put up a clip from the original Batman, Adam West, and it's the doctor that's actually Dr. Freeze, and so officially we've converted from Shivel to Cheval. And Mark Glatt joins us. Doesn't matter to Mark. He didn't care what they were calling the horse, not when he's winning grade ones. Congratulations.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I love it. The group and you, I said on Friday going in after the draw, actually, Wednesday, I said, Mark Glatt's kind of got this race cornered and included, the defending winner, Collusion Illusion, and then ended up scratching. But, here's Dr. Chevelle, and I thought he was just determined. And, of course, Flavian Pratt elevating and helping carry horses to the wire.
Yeah, we were very very fortunate to have three horses to enter into the race, and Collusion Illusion ended up with a grabbed quarter the day before, and he was a little tender on it, so we just felt it was best for him to wait for another day. But still thought we had a very good chances with Dr. Chevelle and Law Abiding Citizen, who ran a very, very strong race as well. Yeah, we were pleased with the outcome.
Well, yeah, and the fact that you bring up the third entrant, the Law Abiding Citizen, who was 21-1 and got beat like a length for everything.
Yeah, he's as game as they come. He really is. He's just a cut below the best sprinters out here in California. And you know, he's ran third in the race last year, and like you said, beaten a length or so the other day. And we felt like he had a very good chance, even at a big price, if a couple of the other horse, you know, the top horses in the race didn't show up with their A game. He's going to try and beat you, that horse. Like I said, he's as game as they come, and he showed that gameness, just wasn't quite good enough the last bit there.
This horse now, and this is a big win. I mean, as a three-year-old facing Elders, that's a nice feather. I mean, had beaten Elders at Santa Anita in an allowance try, but he's now a dual Grade One winner, having won the Del Mar Futurity. This is a big win actually for Hill and Dale, and we'll salute Violence. Another. And a three-year-old Grade One winner. This was an important effort for him.
Yeah, it is. We had an option. We had considered going back to New York for the Amsterdam yesterday, and maybe keeping him there for the Jerkins at the end of the meet at the end of August. And as we kind of analyzed things, you know, Saratoga is a very tough racetrack to ship into, and the horse had been undefeated at Del Mar. And so with weighing the options and realizing we were facing older horses, we felt it was best to give the race here a shot. And if we were lucky enough to win, you'd have his way paid into the Breeders' Cup. And so fortunately it worked out. And, they ended up with a pretty muddy racetrack yesterday, or sloppy track. So that would have been another variable that we would have had to have endured with him back there yesterday. But he ran one heck of a race, showed quite a bit of gameness himself, and I think just given how far he's come along here this year in a pretty short period of time is really pretty remarkable.
Well, and I know people. People saw the fig and thought, well, that wasn't a strong group, 90 buyer. But he's run bigger figs than that. He's now 3-for-3 at Del Mar, which has got to really give you confidence. You go back to the time with Louis Mendez and the maiden win and the Del Mar Futurity win. I mean, how many horses are going to, be undefeated at Del Mar when we get to Breeders' Cup weekend?
He may be the only one.
I love it.
Yeah, as far as the numbers are concerned, if people think that was a weak race just because maybe the buyer didn't come back as strong as what maybe people expect out of a race of that kind. Last I checked, numbers don't pay you anymore, so I don't get too concerned about numbers. And that race was a very, very strong race, and so we'll take it with a grain of salt and not really worry about what the number was and proceed on to the next step.
Well, and we should touch on, I mentioned Louis Mendez, and you've had the horse here as a three-year-old. I mean, talk about Red Baron and Rancho Temescal, who we got tremendous respect for. You and I have you've got other horses for them, and Louis Mendez has built this reputation for getting young horses up and running, doing it again this summer. But what have you learned about him? I mean, you're still probably still getting to know him a little bit.
Well, Louis Mendez did an excellent job with the horse, obviously, and Rancho Temescal had bought into the the horse, bought majority interest of the horse prior to the futurity last year, and we felt like it would be best to just leave him in Louis' name and under his care for the futurity. And it worked out well. He got the grade one win in the futurity, and then I took possession of the horse right after the futurity. And, you know, the horse, he'd had a lot of hard training, and he'd had some hard races, and he was starting to show, you know, a bit of wear and tear. And we just made a decision at that time, you know, to give the horse some time off. And, you know, it's paid off here clearly. And, you know, talking about Jed and Tim Cohen and the Cohen family, they're just excellent to train for. You know, when a horse needs time off, they don't hesitate. They just say, do what you got to do, do what you think is best. And so it's very, it makes my job a lot easier. You know, how many owners are going to pay a big number for a horse, win the futurity, and then be told that, you know, that the horse probably needs some time off? And his performance in the futurity didn't necessarily show that he needed some time, but we wanted to be on the conservative side and just felt like if we put him away for a while that we would probably have a much bigger and better and stronger horse, and so far it's played out that way.
There's parts of this, and I'll probably bring it up with Sid Fernando on Wednesday. I got a lot to discuss with Sid. Mention violence, and of course, you know, we've had any number of discussions with John Sakura about violence, but the damn little nugget who was a cowbred for Ted West that won four times, and she herself was by Mining for Money, who is a complete obscurity to me. And Bondi trained that one, was one for two in the career. I got to find out what the backstory is on this on this female family.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. The breeder of the horse still owns part of the horse with the Cohen family, and he raised the horse, and I've trained for Bill Branch, off and on for several years now. And so the horse came up through the Luis Mendez operation as a two-year-old. And so I've had a couple of horses out of that mare for Mr. Branch. And, you know, they've just been ordinary horses. And so I don't know where this horse came from necessarily, but you know, that's the beauty of the game. You know, you just never know, and she certainly threw a good one here. So I think Mr. Branch might want to think about going back to violence as quickly as he can, because the mare is still around. So
how about that? The mare, actually, she's going to be 20 in the spring, in first of the year, and she does have a midshipman 2-year-old, Barsini Red.
Correct.
Do you have that, or does Louis?
Louis trains that horse.
Okay. All right. He's 0-3, but has hit the board all three times. Feels like is going to, you know, maybe it might be moving in the right direction. Although, you know, I'm just looking, kind of falls in line, it seems, with much of the family. Very, really, that's one of the things that's just that's just remarkable. And of course, violence has, you know, built a reputation for getting, you know, precocious horses and you know, early horses. But here's a 3-year-old mid-season that clearly is, you know, I'm going to be a player on the road toward the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Mark, in addition to Dr. Chevelle, a couple of thoughts about the meet. You've had a very steady, you know, first third here of Del Mar.
Yeah, so we've been fortunate enough to get off to a decent start, and hopefully we got, we've got some other stuff coming along here that we'll do well. I ran a 2-year-old filly by the name of Dance to the Music. Yep. A week or so ago, that was very impressive in her debut, And so we're looking forward. I think she'll be pointed right to the debutante off of that win. So we're looking forward to an opportunity to run her in the debutante. And she bounced back out of the race well. And so for right at the moment here, I don't see any reason why we won't be able to, you know, take a shot in the debutante. They got a couple of other two-year-olds that are close to debuts, and just looking forward to hopefully a fun summer, fun and safe rest of the summer here.
A couple of questions, because I was really, at opening day, I was all in on what makes Sammy run, and thought, you know, this is going to be, you know, kind of the coming out party, and it feels like, from what I saw from your comments afterward, the turn back is in order.
Yeah, so he came to me in the spring, early in the spring, and, you know, just analyzing his form and watching the replays on the horse. You know, the horse really, you know, had been showing me that he was a one-turn horse. That he was best at being a bit of a late closing sprinter. And we had those opportunities twice at Santa Anita, and he shined in both of those opportunities and ran very impressively. And without really an alternative spot, although I was a bit skeptical, we felt like the Oceanside was worth taking a shot, and he just wasn't as effective. That horse has got a very, very good turn of foot when he can lay back there around one turn and come with a run. And he was just kind of steady. He didn't run poorly in the Oceanside, but he just wasn't the same horse. And so there's nothing wrong with having a great sprinter. We will be pointing him, or we are pointing him, to the Kentucky Downs race, going 6.5 furlongs, and hopefully that's right up his alley.
Well, and I think the purse on that has got to be, it's got to be up to about $3 million by now. I'm just kidding, but the purse is enormous, so why not? And also that's one of those places where if you've got a turf sprinter who has some other aptitude, you know, to go a little further, but not necessarily two turns, that really fits. It's sort of like the downhill course, Mark, right? That if you have somebody that's a little short of a miler, you used to run them down the hill.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've just watched from afar. I've never actually been to Kentucky Downs. Looking forward to hopefully, you know, having that opportunity here in a month and a half or so. But I hear it's a very interesting course. I think from watching the races, you know, especially the last couple of years closely, just really depends upon the weather back there and who may handle a bit of a yielding course. And so we'll see how that ends up coming up this summer. You know, every year the weather could be different, so we'll just have to see. But he is a handy horse. He's not a real big horse. He's not a heavy horse. So if one were to, you know, you would think that he might be the type that would, you know, kind of get through a bit of a yielding course if that's what we end up with this summer or early fall.
Well, and it could go either way. I mean, right now we're getting, you know, this half of the country, and I'm sure you guys would, in parts of the West Coast, would love the kind of rain we're getting. But you just don't know. It could be, you know, it could be firm, and it could be have plenty of yield to it. I imagine that Del Mar on Friday will be firm, and you've got Aventap coming back for a second start. Speaking of closing sprinters, at least that was the MO in the debut. Give us a couple of thoughts about this Tapiture filly.
Well, unfortunately, she was scheduled to run yesterday against fillies, and we were kind of on a timeline here with the Del Mar meeting, and then we go to Los Alamitos, I think, for 3 weeks in September. So to have an opportunity to run her hopefully a couple of times here this summer at Del Mar, when she didn't draw into the field yesterday, just simply because, you know, everybody had equal dates and she was one of the lucky ones on the outside, unlucky ones on the outside looking in, we did enter her against the boys for Friday. And, you know, that gives me the ability to hopefully get a chance back before the end of the meet to run her a second time. But, you know, I don't know what the race looks like for sure. I haven't had a chance to take a look at it. You know, she is running against boys. She gets a little bit of a weight break there. Now, she's a very nice filly. She blew the break in her first start, and she's actually, you know, has shown us quite a bit of early speed. So I don't think that that was really what you saw in her first start, and that was because of the blown break. But if she breaks much better, you know, I would give her a big shot against the boys there on Friday.
Nice. And just glancing myself at the field, Phil D'Amato has got an Irish import. For Michael House, Callie Bay, who debuted at Santa Anita and was second in the debut, got a 72 buyer. Feels like the logical. Take that back. The motto's also he's also got something called Gregory's Pride that was last seen on New Year's Day. In fact, this comes out of the Rock Your World maiden breaker, as it happens. I won't call it completely salty, but it's a solid group, looks like.
Yeah, anytime you're in a maiden allowance, particularly this time of year, you gotta expect that it's going to be a pretty salty race. And so we'll just see. Hopefully she'll have a good experience this time. She didn't necessarily have a bad experience last time, other than, you know, she got a little rattled in the gate and kind of blew it at the break. But hopefully we've got that corrected. And, you know, like I said, she does have early speed. I think she will be a bit more forwardly placed than she was in her debut. And we'll just take our shot. And if, you know, she's not quite good enough against the boys on Friday, well, then we'll get back in against the girls, hopefully before the end of the meet, and give her another roll.
Got to ask about a couple of stakes types, and haven't seen anything. I'm just checking the work tab. Okay, on the work tab. Zestful, that is kind of a nice gelding type that probably either, you know, a rich allowance or some lower level stake opportunity.
Yeah, so Zestful's kind of a hard horse to place because he's at this stage of his career because he's pretty much out of allowance conditions. Yeah. And he's, you know, he's a little bit better than to run for a tag, I think, still at this point. And so I did nominate him yesterday to the Long Acres Mile. He's nominated. We're going to take a look. I did nominate another horse as well for the Long Acres Mile this summer. Comes up in a couple of weeks, so we're going to take a look at that. I do have some interest in the Charlestown Classic at the end of the month, potentially. That might be a bit tough for him. But there's also an allowance race here at Del Mar coming up, which if the race goes, you know, maybe the best option for him. But he's training good. He came with another real good effort up there at Golden Gate. In his last start, he, you know, pretty much sizzled with another horse and the front end, and on that synthetic track, you just can't do that. If memory serves me correctly, I think they went 46 for the half. And you're just not going to do that on that track up there and be able to win. But he was valiant in defeat. He hung in there pretty good to be a real game third. So just trying to get him into a spot where he's got a big shot and can be competitive. You know, maybe the Long Acres Mile's the spot for him. You know, we'll see what the nominations look like. It's a little bit tough getting up there and back, but, you know, certainly on our radar. And we'll see where we end up with him, but I expect him to be running here before the end of the month.
Nice. And the Long Acres Mile, always on the Glatt family radar.
Yeah, I mean, we're from the Northwest. It's their premier race of the year, and growing up as a kid, it's a race that, you know, you always want to try, and everybody wants to win the mile up there. So got a lot of friends and family up there still. Went up there a couple years ago and was fortunate enough to win the race with law-abiding citizen. It might be nice to get up there again this summer and try and win it again. We'll see, like I said, how everything plays out here.
finally another two-year-old that just missed and might have some talent, and I want to be on board when Clampett runs back, that flatter colt.
Yeah, so he's ran very well in his two races. He's a two-turn horse. He's kind of a big, heavy colt and maybe just starting to get tightened up. He's starting to get a little bit of baby fat off of him now, off the two races that he's had. And we kind of have assumed that we were practicing a little bit with him sprinting. But he showed good improvement from start one to start two. And we're just hoping that we can get a flat mile on the dirt, maiden two-year-old race. I will probably see that race, or I'm told we'll see that race in book three. And hopefully there's enough two-year-olds around by that point that want to run a flat mile on the dirt. And I think that might be his chance to shine and start number three going a mile on the dirt.
Clampett, and wanted to be sure to include him in the conversation. And I was remiss not acknowledging that Teddy's Barino on Friday with the placement.
She ran well. She ran extremely well. Probably a little lack of seasoning is what got her beat, although a very nice filly outran her the other day. But she was coming off of just one grass effort off of a pretty lengthy layoff after just one start as a two-year-old. And we jumped into a 7-furlong race off that one grass prep where she broke her maiden. And she tried hard. I think she just got a little tired and probably wasn't quite ready to be dead ready to run 7 furlongs. But she's got a bright future ahead of her. She's a very talented filly. She's going to go long. She's going to do a number of different things, and she still has all of her conditions. So looking forward to what she can do here through the rest of the year.
Well, obviously well positioned for the next portion, and about two-thirds of the meet yet to come. Mark, we're heading out there. We're going to see you. I'll see you Pacific Classic week.
Oh, terrific. Yeah, that'll be nice to see you out here again.
I'm looking forward to it. I was heading to Vegas for the coverage of the NHC, and a couple of the hammers said, how about Del Mar? All right, why not? And so next thing you know, we're locked in to 4 or 5 days at Del Mar. So continued success. Well done. Congratulations. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Sounds good.
Mark Glatt, everybody, one of our favorites on the West Coast, and a very good start to Del Mar, and just gave you, I hope you were taking notes. You got a couple of different up-and-comers and some horses that you're going to see run back. I got the nicest tweet this morning about Lexingtonian and listening in to to Jack Sisterson 2-3 weeks ago, and what Jack had to say about him pointing for the Vanderbilt. So that's how you convert. Let's take a break, I didn't follow through with this, but I suppose Collusion Illusion will be ready for the Pat O'Brien. He'll run in 7/8. He goes 7/8. Yeah, third in the Malibu. Take a break here. A little past, well, not a little past. It's well past the top of the hour. Just noticed how late it was. Going to be joined by Meg. We'll catch up with Rich. His thoughts on the weekend. At the Races, back after this. We got plenty to talk about for today, too. You've got the Tom Ridge at Presque Isle. And you've got the three stakes at Colonial, including the rescheduled De Haas. And the Keswick, and I'm going to forget the third one. I got to pull out the PPs. Back after this, Rich Migliori joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three.